I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Prepare at last his return. Your behavior our Savior discerns. I'll see you in the end, my friend.
Hello and welcome to Book 3 of Tribulation Farce, Nikolai. I am one of the hosts of this podcast, Tim Lanning, and joining me, as always, is Jennifer Cheek.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Jennifer.
It's been a hot second.
Yeah, it's been a while, as they say.
Since we did this podcast, we meant to put things out earlier, but, like, shit just kept happening.
Yeah, like, the fun thing was, like, I got a tattoo so that, you know, it's like, oh, I can't do anything.
I can't talk. My leg hurts.
I have an itchy leg. But then we got COVID and that kind of.
We got fucking COVID. It's actually very funny in retrospect because I guess it's been about 3 weeks ago now, was like starting to feel bad, but didn't know I had COVID yet. And when that happened, I read the first two chapters of Nikolai.
Yeah.
while my brain was starting to be riddled with COVID. So I was worried I wouldn't remember things, but luckily I had underlined and, you know, done all my normal shit. So it all worked out. But, yeah, we're back now. I don't currently feel like I'm dying from COVID.
Right.
So I'm ready to freaking get into this.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. Book 3, you know, first we did book 1. Now, you know, we moved on to book 2 and now it's the third one.
Book
Isn't that
three?
Crazy? That's crazy.
Tell me there's more than two of these
books? I know. There's like 12, 13, or 40, depending on how you chop it up.
And this one, I have to say, I have been dying to get. I mean, this one's called Nikolai.
It's called Nikolai.
So you know we're going to get some good Antichrist shit in this book. It starts off, we get some good Antichrist shit.
Yeah, very much so. Nikolai's in it. He's loud. He's proud. He's loving what's going on here.
He's trying to act like he doesn't.
Like, oh, boo.
But he obviously does. And maybe we should do a little reminder of where things ended up at the end of Tribulation Force, Book 2. Number one, important thing to remember, both Rayford and Buck are now working for Nikolai Carpathia. They're getting that blood money, that Antichrist money, which is great because that comes up. The Antichrist credit card, nearly limitless Antichrist credit card does come up in these chapters.
Right. And you know, Ray is using his, like, security clearance and things of that nature. So,
He's trying to big dog.
Yeah.
They both are doing some big dogging based on being employed by the Antichrist.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
In addition to that, global war has broken out. Maybe some might call it World War III. Lots of bombs.
Yeah. And it happens very quickly from our character's perspective as it's, like, kind of described to us in the book. And I think we talked about cannot wait to start book 3 so we can find out more. And what I liked about book 3 is that it continues the exact same way as book 2.
Yep.
It's very confusing.
Like, it literally just picks up directly where 2 left off and, like, repeats stuff.
Yeah, they even, like, focus in on Rayford's knees hurting, which I think is so fucking funny. But, you know, that's setting the stage for where we are. Where we are, the war, it's busting.
Yeah.
Everyone's together because they spent some time trying to, like, get their schedules to all line up
so they could hang out.
Yeah. They've been married for a little bit now.
Yeah. I don't know how exactly. Like, I want to say, like, maybe, like, 6 months or something.
Yeah. I kind of got confused about the time jump, but, like,
it's long enough for Buck and Chloe to, like, get and decorate a penthouse apartment on Fifth Avenue, which, well, that only lasts for so long. We'll get to that.
R.I.P.
So while global war is breaking out, basically there's a global attempted insurrection against Carpathia, which obviously doesn't work. He survives through trickery, as he does, because there was, like, a whole, like, thing going on of like, I'm pretending, I'm like making them think I'm in this plane, yeah, but I'm in this plane.
A little bit of subterfuge.
Like, there was some subterfuge happening.
Yeah, they had like a very strict and complicated schedule for Nikolai, but then even before the bombing started happening, he kept popping up random places.
Yeah, the disinfo campaign, mm-hmm, very impressive, yeah, from the Carpathia camp.
Very much so.
Bruce Barnes nearly killed by a deadly virus, right, and then definitively killed by an explosion.
I think
which is so sick.
Yeah.
R.I.P. King.
He went out as a real one. It's sort of implied, they say it once in one of the chapters today, that he probably died before the bombs. I don't know where the fuck they got that from.
Oh, I don't think I even, like, picked that up.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, hey, man, I'll bet he died before he got blown up, even though he called Loretta, like, that morning and shit like that.
Yeah, to be like, hold up, with the second you can bring me my laptop, please bring it to me. Which, yeah, that is very understandable to me. If I were in the hospital about to die, I would also be like, bring me my laptop. I need to go online.
I almost went to bed without my phone because I didn't know where it was. And I imagined you finding that out and then just being like, what?
Yeah, no, that doesn't compute to me. But I forget, you read books,
yeah,
bad. Yeah. I torture myself by being on my phone until I go to sleep.
Yes.
Bruce, true king imposter, as we find out, he'd been writing 5,000 pages worth of posts on, yeah, his laptop. Very important stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where we kind of end book two with,
yeah,
updates of explosions all around, and we'll get like some more updates in chapter one.
Can I ask, can we like hold off on one of chapter one?
Okay.
Just 1 second. Can you please read these last very few sentences of the prologue? Because I, mm-hmm, think it's so much.
I like that the prologue goes from like mostly a prologue to be like, or like a recap, and,
yeah,
then the last like three pages are like, I'm just copying.
Yeah, no, like it's literally just a copy, but I do feel like, again, like just to like remind you of where we're at.
Washington had been obliterated. Heathrow was gone. There had been death in the Egyptian desert and in the skies over London. New York was on alert. The red horse of the apocalypse was on the rampage.
Yeah, literally, like, the end of the last book was the red horse of the apocalypse was on the rampage. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I gotta give it up for, like, copy-pasting. Like, I don't need to write that again.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Just add it to the next book.
Chapter one.
Let's go. Speaking of ending and opening lines, very strong opening line.
Oh, my God.
For this book, it made me laugh so hard.
It's so jack-off-y.
It's
I cannot
so
believe
stupid.
they got this through.
Guys, let me just read it to you. It was the worst of times. It was the worst of times. Like, you just fucking know.
Come on,
Jerry
man.
Jenkins was like, I got it, man.
I got it. I figured
got
it
this.
Out. That's from like Tale of Two Cities, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's like the best. It's supposed to be it's the best of times, it's the worst of times.
Yeah.
But to be fair, in the tribulation, I guess everything is the worst.
I mean, it's the worst part the tribulation has been yet. So they aren't wrong
yet.
Saying it.
Yet.
Oh, yeah, not yet.
Yeah.
No.
We know it's going to get
coming.
Way worse. But that made me laugh a lot. And
yeah.
I was like, hell yeah, let's go.
I was like, we are so back, I guess.
We are so back. Yep. And we do, like we said, pick up immediately where book two left off. Like, we were still in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of book two is Rayford, Chloe, Amanda, and Buck in the car together. Rayford,
yes,
is driving. And Rayford is, again, peak dad being like, I know better than all these traffic guide guard dudes. They're trying to tell me where to go, but I know where I need to go.
Fucking rent-a-cops make me want to turn left. No way, man. I know a shortcut.
Yeah, and he's like driving on the fucking like sidewalk,
yeah,
or whatever. But yeah, he's trying to ignore them. But finally, they like get like waved down by one of the various henchmen to be like, "Hey, man, are you Rayford Steele?"
Like, what the fuck?
Like, who's asking?
Yeah, it was like, I think that guy's yelling at you. It's like, yeah, everyone's yelling
yeah,
at me.
Care.
I'm driving like a maniac. It's like, no, that guy's like yelling
like,
at
he's
you.
Like, Rayford Steele, come here. We get a quick cut to Buck's point of view, which was great because Buck is like ready to be like, all right, I've got my fake,
yep,
ID. But Rafer, just tell him I'm a pilot friend. My name is Herb Katz now.
Yeah, let's do some quick skulldug and make sure our stories are set straight.
And it kind of ends up not super mattering because like they really just want to contact. They just want Rafer.
Yeah.
Because Carpathia is on the damn phone waiting to talk to him.
Oh, God.
Raper goes over, has a little phone call with Carpathia, and in the meantime, the security guy looks at Buck, number one, sexist, and says to him, "Sir, in the event that we transport Captain Steele to a rendezvous point, would you be able to handle the disposition of this vehicle?"
And I did like that Buck makes fun of him for
bro,
talking
that
way.
What are you
way.
Talking about? Yeah. But I also, like, I frankly am like, I don't know that anyone talks like this.
Yeah.
At all.
I don't, if someone asked me that disposition, like, I think the car's okay. He seems not sad.
Yeah, like, what are you saying? Like, it definitely feels like one of those where it's kind of like when they try to talk in, like, Bible-y speak and they just, like, make shit up. They're like, this is just, like, what a military guy sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. This is bureaucratic military man for sure.
Yeah. So, Rayford and Amanda. Amanda gets to go with Rayford. But they're separated from Buck and Chloe. Rayford and Amanda are going to a helicopter.
Yeah.
Because they are going to go meet up with Carpathia at a nearby closed naval air station.
Yeah. And, like,
there's a lot of logistics in these chapters of, like, okay, the helicopter's going here, and then we're going to go here, and then we're going to go here. So I tried to kind of flatten this out, but just, they're leaving the car, and they're going in a helicopter, so now the two couples are separated.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, okay, you're going to Dallas Airport, but you're not. You're going to the left of it.
Right,
you
right.
You know, it's like when you go to the airport and it's like, okay, here's our airport part. But on your way up, you see like all the FedEx airplanes
right.
and shit like that. And but imagine if it was a military base or something.
Yeah, like a decommissioned military
base. Yeah, but like
base, whatever.
A helicopter just fucking picks them up like right there and there.
It's like ready to go.
Like that's sick.
So while Rayford and Amanda are heading towards the helicopter, Buck and Chloe are trying to, cause this is a rental car, just a reminder. The car they're in is a rental car, and they're trying to make their way back to O'Hare Airport to drop the rental car off. And Buck is just like Rayford, he's like, I fucking hate this traffic.
Yeah, cause they were going to the church first, because Buck was like, hey, can you drop me off at Newspaper Town? He's like, no, church first. Then they get stopped by the military, and now Buck has to take care of the disposition of the car.
Yeah, exactly. And he is ready to do that.
Yeah.
So while they're driving in the car, they get a report on the radio that a nuclear bomb has been dropped in New York City.
Oh, shit.
Which is where their house is.
Yeah, they're kind of saying that New York is way fucked up. Lots of bombings.
They have the, like, reporter guy being like, well, I'm probably already radiated. Right. I'm probably going to die.
Yeah, and then they're like, well, we're not sure if it was nukes or not, but everyone's encouraged to stay underground just in case.
Yeah.
And we do know nukes were dropped other places. Thank you, the folks who really just explained how big a 100 megaton bomb would have been.
Like, it's absurd.
It's like, that is so big that it's like they talk about the idea of fucking up the Earth's rotation and shit like that.
Like, knock it off its fucking axis, man. Yeah, like, this is, like, I mean, a surprise that this is talked about in this way.
Yeah, it's so confusing, and maybe it makes sense, maybe it doesn't, I have no idea. This war sounds very strange. We probably never will have a war like this, because this is literally biblical sort of.
Right.
Like,
Four horsemanship.
Like, normally, quote unquote, evil, rational state leaders bashing up against each other, right? So it's like, I don't know how the militia, including the lame duck president.
That part was so confused. Like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah. But they get away with it because, one, Carpathia, it's very implied, knew this was going to happen. Yeah, he wants it to happen.
It's all part of his evil plan.
And, you know, the devil is running ramshod, quote-unquote, through the... So, no, we've said it before, they have the perfect out. Things don't have to make sense. They don't have to be rational.
Because the devil's doing it.
The devil's doing it.
And he's magic. His devil magic is allowing it.
They keep blowing up airports.
They love doing that. Do they want to, like, keep people, like, is Carpathia's plan to, like, keep people in, like, little zones? Like, why are they doing the airport specifically?
Like, all the ones that the militia blow up make sense-ish, because they're trying to find Carpathia.
Right, and they know he's flying place to place.
So the idea is, you have, like, some tanks, some airplanes, you used to be part of the United States military, now you're part of a coup, and then your homies from Egypt are also there?
And Britain.
In Britain. And they're just flying around, blowing shit up. Very confusing, but like, we know for sure that the airport at Heathrow was Nikolai, and their excuse there was they saw other fighter planes.
They saw the planes, and they're like, we have to preemptively blow up this airport.
But as we go forward, more and more airports get blown up. Thus, as we've been saying, cementing the weird fetishization of pilots and airplanes. They're like, what is the most important place in the world of any, like, community? It's the airport.
Airport. Absolutely. So, speaking of airports and blowing up, as Book and Chloe are trying to drive away from the scene, they see a damn mushroom cloud in the direction of O'Hare. So someone's blasted O'Hare Airport now.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't think they tell us who did it in this book yet, but there's so much like chaos and confusion. And remember, they're just driving around and
they're just like trying to get like around traffic.
Yeah.
And yeah, their car gets like rocked by the explosion.
Yeah.
Which is at O'Hare. So like, again, must be a pretty fucking big bomb. I mean, I don't know exactly how far away they are from it, but
yeah, I don't know where they are.
It's rocking your car.
Cause they left O'Hare cause that's where they got their car, right?
Yeah. And then they went somewhere else.
And they were going somewhere else.
They went to the hospital.
You went to the hospital and it's confusing. I wish they would have leaned into their worst vices and just told us like street names and shit.
Yeah, I just need to know that you're thinking about this logically, Jerry, you know?
Later they talk about food and they don't tell us what it is.
I'm pissed! It makes me what
angry.
The fuck?
It makes me very angry.
So Buck, once the blast happens, Buck starts doing some real, like, action movie driving. Yeah. Like, extremely, like, driving on the curb, like, going into the median to, like, go around people. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? And Chloe's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Because he's not just, like, driving on the shoulder. He's, like, driving in the dirt. And they talk about him, like, going over, like, ditches.
And, like, going the other direction.
Going the wrong direction. Like, going crazy. Like, through backyards and shit. It's pretty funny.
And Chloe seems pretty stressed about it, which I would, because it's like Buck's not like really explaining himself either, which pisses me off.
I hate you. Also, like, in this time, this is gonna get you shot.
Yeah, yeah. That's unrealistic.
Yeah, Buck, this was a mistake.
You would have gotten a flashbang thrown at you, like 500%. But Buck does say it to Chloe. I don't know what I'm doing, babe, but I know one thing I'm not doing. I'm not poking along in a traffic jam while the world goes to hell.
Tell him.
Yeah, he doesn't. Buck is above the laws of traffic because he's a Christian.
He kind
of
does imply that.
He's part of the tribulation force, so he doesn't have to follow the laws of the land.
And he's Buck. He knows how to always be like.
Always
mobile.
Be bucking.
Yeah, always A-B-B. Be bucking.
Including bucking traffic laws.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Fuck him.
So, Raper and Amanda are connected with Carpathia, and they're like, man, he seems like he's in a weirdly good mood for the fact that bombs are just, like, being dropped everywhere on the Earth.
Just constantly having to smile his, like, giddy little smile, or having to hide his giddy little smile.
Yeah, and they mention here, after nearly 2 years of peace and a largely successful campaign to charm the masses following the terror-filled chaos of the global vanishings, Carpathia now faced significant opposition for the first time.
Oh, no.
Which you think that would make him pissed, but,
no.
But he likes it because it's chaos.
He
was like,
it.
Yes, yes.
Chaos is a ladder. Nikolai Carpathia.
He climbing it.
1999.
Yeah. We meet a new henchman.
Yeah.
That has a really fun name.
Yeah.
Leon Fortunato.
This guy rocks. We love him.
I'm like, is this a Poe reference? Like, what's going on? And Rafer thinks of, in his mind, of him as a sycophant from the new Babylon office.
Yeah, so it's like, Rafer knows who he is.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this bitch.
Yeah.
Carpathia does a very funny move where he, like, let's step back. We know Carpathia. This is the man who just, like, listed all the countries in the world, and everyone was like, wow,
whoa,
with no list. And yet...
And their leaders.
And their leaders. And yet he forgets Amanda's name. And you know his ass is just doing it to be intentionally disrespectful, which is very funny. And it does make Amanda mad.
Yeah, it is funny. Ray's like, he's the Antichrist, and this is what you're focusing on? Gosh.
Like, which is funny for a couple of reasons, because he's right... But then also later, Rayford has a similar situation.
Yeah, he's like, God damn it. There's a couple like, times Rayford has like bad initial reactions. He's like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah.
He's like, there's like a line that's like, a pilot's ego knows no bounds.
Yeah,
like,
Rayford does love to be reminded what a little worm he is. Like, he loves to remind himself of what a worm he is.
Because when he's driving the crew and Buck's like, do you want me to drive? He's like, no.
No.
Because he's like, I have to be in charge.
Yeah.
I'm a little worm.
And he does have the thought of like, maybe I should have let Buck drive the car because I'm kind of crying right now. Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he beat himself up for it. And then now it happens he's again later in reference to this.
But you gotta admit, it is pretty funny to get mad at the Antichrist being disrespectful of you.
I kind of completely agreed with Amanda here, not Rayford, because it's weird.
It is weird. Funny. No, it's intentional.
And it's like,
it's obviously
why
intentional.
Is he doing this? Like, it makes no sense.
He's just trying to get under her skin for some reason?
Yeah, if she was doing it in a way, she probably was, because she's a woman in these books, if she was doing it in a way that's like, how dare he? Type situation, then yes, that is silly.
Totally. But she's not. She's like, we know this man does not forget anything.
Yeah.
What is his fucking problem?
Yeah, like, what is his end goal here by negging Amanda?
Yeah, why is he trying to do that?
He's gonna fuck her.
Man, he's probably trying to net her. Mm-hmm. It's true. So, Carpathia tries to look sad while he hears about all the various disasters happening around the world. He's like, but we find out that the Carpathia crew are heading from where they are in Illinois to Dallas.
Yeah.
To reunite with a new plane.
Everyone. Ooh.
The Condor 216. Which is apparently a plane that Carpathia designed and named himself.
This is insane. I love it.
Carpathia, he's just designing planes now?
Right. I mean,
he's a plane engineer?
He, much like everyone, the authors assume, he also thinks about planes and how to make them better and more perfect.
Yeah, which, you know, like, in this world where he's essentially Satan, like, sure, like, you probably have all knowledge of everything, so you can, like...
It's his special interest. It's his hyper-focus.
It's one of his, including bombs and setting off bombs.
UN members.
Yeah, exploding, or causing people to shoot each other in the head. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there's apparently going to be a big fancy new plane.
And Ray's like, what the fuck?
What are you talking about?
What is happening about? And our characters, and especially from Ray's point of view, don't know what's happening. Like, no one knows what's happening because it's the chaos of this war. But Ray specifically is in the zones of people that should know. And there's a lot of, like, I don't know what's happening. And then Ray, it gets a lot of things dropped on him.
Yes.
Specifically in his sphere, which is airplane. Here's a new airplane
the airplane sphere.
Yeah.
But that makes sense to me. It's like, Carpathia is, like, yeah, he doesn't want to keep people in the know. Like, he wants to keep everyone just knowing exactly what they need to know. That's OPSEC, baby.
Yeah. And I also think he just does it to, like, fuck with people.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of it, too. It's like he's got to keep them guessing. They don't ever quite know what's going on. He's in charge. Then we do a quick cut over to Buck and Chloe because Buck is at the Land Rover dealership. He's like, fuck these normal-ass cars. I need essentially a tank.
Yeah, they rented a nice car, but oddly enough, it's not very good at driving through soccer fields.
In people's backyards.
So, like, he whips the car around, and Chloe's like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, I gotta get to a very specific highway in Chicago that you all know, and I need to buy a cool car. And they say Land Rover by name, probably product placement. I hope Jerry B got a free one.
Yeah, they got that sponsorship. Yeah. They do talk a lot about how cool the Land Rover
is. This
is pretty
awesome.
Soon, so it does kind of feel like SpawnCon to me.
Chapter 2.
Hell yeah. So Rayford and Amanda are now in a little plane. Mm-hmm. So they've gone from helicopter to little plane.
Yeah, Learjet is what my book at least said.
It did say, yes, mine also said Learjet. There's definitely some stuff we're going to need to compare and contrast.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
The Land Rover specifically.
Yeah, one of the lines there, I'm like, you should have changed this. This should.
Okay, so do you have the, so that sounds this, like you
the
have
the 2-inch CD?
Yes, yeah. Okay. I was like, I was like, oh my God,
Keep this?
So they did, so you have the newer one. Are you
I
sure?
assume so, yeah. It is the new cover. Yet again, dear listener, I gave blood money.
Oh,
I bought the Amazon double evil version.
How much did you pay for it?
$11.
You are a fool.
I know.
Because
I should just buy the real version, the books.
I just bought mine, heads up, Powell's Books, which is a great bookstore in Portland, Oregon. Mm. They're a used bookstore primarily. And man, I got these things for cheap as hell. I got like five of them for like $23.
Yeah.
They're like literally like $5 each. Right?
I if I would have planned better, I would have bought...
I should have just bought double of them.
Yeah, the paper version. But I need the new ones.
So you need the new ones, exactly. Yeah, no, I was very... I'm like, I need the Classico covers. Like, I am not trying to get on any of these new updated covers. Yeah. It's bullshit to me.
Yeah, the new cover sucks.
But. I only want the old covers that are, like, shiny and they're, like, crazy colors. Like, that's all I'm interested in. We'll get into the Range Rover stuff in a second. But, yeah, so Raver and Amanda went from little helicopter to little plane. And Rayford and Amanda are they're holding hands in the little 6-seater plane, and then Carpathia's like, "Hey Rayford, why don't you go hang out in the cockpit and get out of here?"
Right, because Ray is like, "I don't know how to fly this fucking plane." Yeah. Speaking of the small one, and I guess Carpathia's like, "Well, maybe you'll learn something up there. Who's to say?"
Which is now I'm like weird. Like, what is it? Because Rayford meets the pilot, whose name is Chico Hernandez.
Hello.
First, when Rafer meets Chico, he, mentions right off the bat that they've spotted no enemy aircraft between Illinois and Dallas.
Okay.
And Tim, can you read this little segment here?
Yeah.
From this little thought line of Rayford's.
Enemy aircraft, Rayford thought. There's an interesting way to refer to American militia forces. He recalled not liking the militias, not understanding them, assuming them criminals. But that had been when the American government was also their enemy. Now, they were allies of lame duck United States President Gerald Fitzhugh. And their enemy was Rayford's enemy. His boss, of all things. But his enemy, nonetheless.
So, what the I don't understand what's going on with Fitzhugh. Because my...
Lame duck President Fitzhugh.
That part I get. Mm-hmm. But I thought that he got, like, hypnotized by Carpathia to, like, be on his side.
Well, he was until Carpathia took his airplane, and he was mad as hell about it.
And then he was like, fuck you, you took fuck my airplane. You. I'm going rogue now.
Yeah, and then after the time
I'm gonna
jump.
I'm going to explode you.
Yeah, after the time jump, it got much worse, is the assumption here, okay. Right? So,
like, is President Fitzhugh, like, out in the open? Like, is he still in the fucking White House? Or is he like, I'm a rebel maybe, commander now?
Because, remember, they've set up the Ten Kings or whatever it is. So
which
there's
is,
someone...
Which we kind of start getting to at the end of this chapter.
So we have... It was mentioned at the end of the last book, there is someone in charge of, like, North America, so to speak.
Right. Okay. Yes. And thank you. So that's what... So he's essentially, like, a nothing. Like,
yeah. I forget what the regional... leaders of like Canada, Mexico, and so forth are or what they're doing. Lame duck kind of like
no,
a
that makes that does make
is
sense.
Is the
actually.
Assumption right? Like he's allowed to be the president, but he doesn't do anything. He has no
right.
Real power.
He's like symbolic at this point. Like no real power. So while they're up there in the cockpit, Chico kind of they've got their little pilot headphones and headsets on, and Chico suddenly lets Rayford know, like, hey, this is a private line.
It's, you know, pilot-to-pilot stuff, right? They're comrades.
Yeah, boy-to-boy.
Yeah.
Rayford finds out. Global Community 1, his previous plane that he had been the pilot of, evaporated.
Damn.
Gone. Exploded.
Damn.
Gone.
R.I.P. So it existed for such a short time for us.
That's so true. R.I.P. Global Community 1. Mm-hmm. And Rayford's stressed because he's like, oh, shit.
Oh, crap.
That's the plane that I suggested Earl Halliday fly.
I killed my friend.
I killed my old boss. But good news, he's actually not dead. Chico lets Rayford know that. He's like, no, he's in Dallas. You'll see him.
Yeah, it's like, he's not only is he not dead, but he's in Dallas, and he's gonna help you figure out how to fly the fucking Condor 216.
Because Earl Halliday apparently practically built the Condor 216 himself.
Guys.
What is happening?
How deep does this go?
How deep and how long?
How long?
Like, how long has he been helping on this plane?
It's so confusing. I mean, it's confusing to Rayford, so it's confusing to us, which is fine. And they basically say that, like, yeah, this plane must have been in the works for years.
Yeah, because it's a big, super fancy plane. And this is the moment where Rayford has his, like, oh, damn, maybe I was wrong to make fun of my wife. Because Rayford's, like, getting pissed, like, why didn't no one tell me about this?
I'm out of the loop on pilot stuff.
I can't believe the Antichrist let me out of the loop.
What if I had an opinion on a knob or something?
And then he's also like, okay, well, damn. Okay. I did have the same feeling about the Antichrist. That's stupid.
I wish there would have been, like, big, bold letters of, like, hey, I'm still a misogynist sometimes. That's bad.
I can't help it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Cut now back over to Buck and Chloe at the Land Rover dealership.
Yeah.
And Chloe's like, do you feel like you just spent the devil's money? Which is very funny.
Yeah, and I like that Buck says, I know I did. And the Antichrist has never invested a better dollar for the cause of God.
Take that, Nikolai. Mm-hmm. You're paying for Buck's fancy-ass Land Rover.
Do you think when your city is being bombed that the car dealerships are open?
I guess they fucking aren't here. The Land Rover dealership guys are like, I'm trying to get my commission.
Yeah.
And they're smart because they got one.
Yeah, I guess the parlance would be essential workers, you know?
And of course, car salesmen.
Yeah. I salute you. I bang pots and pans. I clap. Thank you so much, Land Rover dealership.
They're out there working hard in the apocalypse, in the tribulation. So we kind of already spoiled this, but they go into, like, detail about how sick this Land Rover is. And one of the things they mention specifically is that it has a CD player that plays those new 2-inch jobs.
No idea what that is.
I don't even know what that is.
I mean,
like, were there little mini ones? I don't remember.
GameCube games?
Like, I missed that. Like,
yeah, I know they existed, and I know I put that they could work in normal CD players sometimes, and a lot of CD drives and computers had like 2 slots, right? Yeah. They had like the big one and the smaller one.
I don't know that I ever really saw one of those, though. Like, I feel like
I never saw one that was like meant to do something like, okay, this is a weird demo disc for a game or something like that. Yeah.
I only ever, like, I basically went from like CDs to like your MP3, like iPod situation.
You know, for those a little bit younger, here's how it went. It went cassettes. It went CDs, then it went cassette with a cord coming out
that was so good
to your like iPod or whatever. Like, you know, some newer cars didn't have cassette things, and you're like, well, how am I supposed to listen to my iPod now? It was a very strange,
very
time.
Very weird time.
And they had like these things that you could use, like radio to transmit. Yes. It was so strange.
Yeah,
good times.
Really weird time. Yeah, and now we just have Bluetooth that only works sometimes.
And the aux cable for which you pass.
Oh, the classic aux cable. Buck buys this fancy ass Land Rover.
It's almost like $100,000.
Yeah, he buys it with his senior level Carpathia employee credit card.
And he's like, I can spend whatever the fuck I want.
And like, honestly, this is like a purchase that does make sense in this world. Like, I don't even think Carpathia would really raise an eyebrow at this.
And
like,
I think,
well, of course you need a fancy ass car.
Yeah, and Buck even says that like, his boss is Carpathia. The only person that can tell him no is Carpathia.
Yeah. So in their new Land Rover, they make their way now to New Hope Village Church. I think that's the name of it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't fucking remember. The only person there is Loretta. Remember Loretta? She's like the secretary at the church.
Yeah.
And she's pretty stressed because she's like watching the news to be like, is Pastor Bruce okay? And they gotta let her know, no, he's dead as hell.
It's like, did you see him? Like, no, Ray did, but he's gone.
Pretty dead.
He's gone.
And Laura's very sad because remember, she lost her entire family to the rapture.
Yeah, I don't know if they said this in the previous books. I know it was implied that Loretta lost a fuck ton of people in the rapture, But she says over 100.
Like, literally everyone. Like, because she's an older lady, so, like, all her, like, you know, sisters and brothers and, like, kids and grandkids and everyone.
And it's implied that she's, like, a Southern belle, so, you know.
Yeah, I feel like Jerry Jenkins was really trying hard to get his Southern accent going on with her.
Oh, man. I was like, I gotta read the audiobook. I think I have the audiobooks for all of these.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I do want to know how that sounds.
Oh, you can listen to all the audiobooks for free. Someone told me how to do that, and I've probably mentioned in the show, or I didn't. I don't remember.
You should do that.
Yeah.
Said, don't pay any more money for this, unless it's to a used bookstore.
I'll play World of Warcraft as I do my research.
Oh my Hell God, yeah. Yes. What a wonderful background to the World of Warcraft. Because isn't this the World of Warcraft?
It's like, this is the goddamn same. Wow.
So there's no cool, well, I was going to say there's no cool mounts, but I guess a Land Rover is a pretty cool mount.
Learjet, yeah. Condor, yeah. You know, baby.
Cool shit. So Loretta is pretty upset, and she's in the middle of printing out a bunch of shit because before Bruce was taken to intensive care, this is the whole laptop thing we were talking about. Bruce is like, hey, like, when you can, like, please bring me my laptop, but until then, can you print out all the stuff?
Right.
All the documents from my laptop.
And it's like, hey, I'm going to tell you how to do it. Just do print bb.g or some shit like that.
I love the specificity of that.
It's like, how would that work? But learning all the new hot printer tech that we have here, and I liked how, at least in my version, everyone's like, how the hell is this modern printer using the never-ending paper printer?
Yes, no, that happened in my book as well, and I mean, to be fair, like,
very confusing.
Yeah, because like, are they talking about the paper with the like little holes on the side?
I assume so. Yeah, right.
Man.
Yeah, so like paper used to be perforated and would fold in on itself.
And it used to be long paper folded in on itself.
Yeah,
because like, did it have like little perforated between the pages? And you rip it up? Okay. Because I remember the perforations on the side with the holes, but I don't fully remember the ripping it apart.
Yeah,
because you used to be able to like make banners and shit with it back in the day.
Things were good.
Back when the fonts on the computers were green and the background was black. In the good times.
Yes, absolutely.
So first Loretta is like, well, I guess there's no point printing this out since Bruce is dead. And they're like, well,
opposite.
A second. And before we get super deep into the notes and what's there, we meet another new character.
Hell yeah.
The king of tech, Donnie Moore. I like this guy already.
I love this guy
already. This dude is awesome, and I do have to say he seems very autistic coded to me.
I like that when he was brought up, they're like, the phone guy? He's like, oh, he's way more than the phone guy.
He is a tech king.
He knows everything.
Yeah, so he was the one that was helping set up the printer and all that stuff. So we're gonna come back to Donnie Moore soon.
A little bit later.
But yeah, apparently Bruce had literally over 5,000 pages. Of notes on his computer. Tim, can you read this little section for us?
Okay. Every page Buck glanced at contained personal writing from Bruce. This included his own commentary on Bible passages, sermon notes, devotional thoughts, and letters to friends and relatives, and church mint.
Oh, that's a typo.
Oh, no. Church mint from around the globe?
I don't know what I was trying to say.
Well, all right. Church mint from around the globe. At first, Buck felt guilty, as if he were invading Bruce's privacy. And yet, why had Bruce urged Loretta to print all this stuff? Was he afraid he might be gone? Had he wanted to leave it for their use?
Now, to me, what's happening is that they're clearly trying to, like, make a connection to, like, the writing that Bruce did to, like, the writing of, like, Paul.
Yeah.
And, like, the different writings of the New Testament.
I got pretty nervous that it's going to be, like, the Bruce Bible.
Because it is, like, the Gospel of Bruce.
Yeah. I'm like, this is pretty sacrilegious.
Bruce-alonians.
Yeah. But here we have this giant fucking thing, and, you know, they kind of imply at some point, maybe it's around here, maybe it's later, that Bruce must have had a premonition, right? Because it was this morning that he called Loretta about it.
Oh, I didn't realize it was the same day.
Yeah, because he got moved into intensive care that morning.
Shit.
So he's like, you actually can't come. Bring me my laptop.
Yeah.
But
print the shit out.
Print the shit out because I might be in here a while. and no one can visit me in the intensive care.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it is a premonition. I mean, like, he was already, like, in the hospital with a disease, some sort of virus.
Yeah.
And he was going to intensive care. Mm-hmm. So not, definitely wasn't looking great for him.
Yeah. But he was able to use the phone, so I don't know.
True. That's true. And that's why I'm like, maybe it wasn't the virus. I thought, I don't know if it was, who knows what it was. Who knows what killed
him? I think it's probably just, like, I mean, I don't really talk to a lot of missionaries now, so I don't know what the state of things are, but there was always very much at my church, like, oh, we have to raise money so that the missionaries can get vaccines for the crazy, savage viruses exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, they do have different viruses, but still, it's very, very, like,
right.
Strange.
Yeah, so I'm just, like, laughing, thinking about, like, I mean, I guess maybe Bruce kept in mind while he was writing all these things that other people might be seeing.
Right, them. Letters to random folks.
But, like, yeah, that feels, like, kind of weird and invasive. And, like, I'm just, like, thinking of him, like, having, like, prayer request lists in there. Yeah, and it's, like, a bullet point is, like, stop jacking off.
Yeah, it's, like, this is so important. We have to keep it.
Stop crying while jacking off.
Craig keeps choking himself as he jacks off because he misses people so much.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. And, So Buck is, like, hit with the realization, like, oh, shit, like, this is important.
Yeah,
like,
this is Bible, needs, too.
This is the Bible, too, exactly. And so he tells Loretta, we need 1,000 copies of all that stuff. Print it on two sides and bound simply. And Loretta's like, that'll cost a fortune. And, guys, I can confirm, as a person who deals with printing out documents for work, this would cost so much fucking money.
Yeah.
1,000 copies of 5,000 pages? Mm-hmm. Like, literally, that would be thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
It would be so much money.
Yeah. But hey, Nikolai, baby.
Because, like, I've, like, printed out things for work that are, like, maybe, like, 200 or 300 pages, and there's, like, 5 copies of it. And it's, like, a solid, like, $700.
Yeah, and this is, like, early 2000s money, which is another thing, and, like, I guess fucking their Range Rover was like $150,000.
Oh my God.
In our time.
Adjusting for inflation?
Yeah, without even doing real math. Who knows, right?
So yeah, this is going to be expensive, but I mean, again, Buck's got that Carpathia card, so he doesn't fucking
care. He got that devil money.
He's got that devil money, but also, like, how's he going to, like, explain? I mean, how's he going to explain that?
I was printing out pro-Carpathia pamphlets.
Yeah, to hand out.
Well, I mean, he works in the news, so he's like...
Yeah, true. Yeah, he can probably always,
printing supplies.
Like, but then, like, we get to it more at the end of the chapter, of, like, certain things he can't justify putting on the card.
Yeah, that was weird.
Because I, like, honestly feel like this is going to cost as much as that.
We might as well, we'll say it. It's, you know, Jennifer, your classic phrase, spoiler. Yeah. He gets Donnie to buy him or make him, like, fancy laptops.
Like satellite computers that, like, can do video conferencing.
Whoa. But he won't put that on the Carpathia dime, which I was kind of confused about.
Like, I feel like the computers he would be able to justify.
Well, I guess computers, like, if it was specifically for Carpathia shit,
right,
they would have to bring it on and be like, let me put the Antichrist viruses on it.
Yeah, let me put, like, the Carpathia wear on the laptops. Yeah, I guess he doesn't want Carpathia to be, like, at all aware that those computers exist.
Right.
He wants to keep them off the grid.
Right.
So, fair enough.
And they know that they need to start stockpiling and prepping and things like that.
Yeah, they gotta go real prepper mode. ASAP. Now, here's a question. How is that underground bunker going? Did they talk about that? I forget
They finished it.
They finished it?
Remember,
because
they...
Oh, right, because it's kind of small.
Yeah, they met down there.
They should have made it bigger.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. So... Chloe helps Loretta set up a phone tree. Guys, remember phone trees?
Shout out phone trees.
Did your church have a phone tree that would send things around?
I think so.
Like, if it snowed and it was like a church would be canceled?
Oddly enough, never came up in Florida.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, it did come up for us sometimes. While Chloe's helping Loretta set up the phone tree, Buck goes over to meet with Tech Wizard Donnie Moore.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, I just love his, like, intro. He's like, Mr. Williams, sir, came Donnie's characteristic staccato delivery. Advice is my middle name. And as you know, I work at home, so I can come to you or you can come to me and we can talk whenever you want.
Love this guy.
This guy's a king. I love him. Donnie Moore, you rule. He's very sad to find out that Bruce is dead, but he's also very, I guess, even more so willing to help Buck with anything because he's like, I got to do this for my bro Bruce.
People like to stay busy in times of crisis.
That's so
too
true. Back over to Rayford now. And things are not looking super chill from the little plane that they're in. Because Rayford sees billowing black clouds over the Dallas-Fort Worth commercial airport.
Oh, no. Not another airport lost in this war.
What airport still exists in this world?
What the fuck?
Once they land, Rayford and the crew are ushered to the hangar where the new fancy plane is. And there, standing at attention in a neat row, were four of the 10 international ambassadors who represented huge land masses and populations and reported directly to Carpathia. So there's four of these, I guess ambassadors is what they're calling. And we know because of, you know, revelation prophecy shit that there's going to be like 10 leaders under the Antichrist. So this is four of these guys.
Yeah.
And guess who else is here?
Who?
Earl Halliday.
What the hell?
Rayford's old boss. So he's not dead, which is great, but he is not happy to see Rayford. Or at least he's acting like he's not happy to see Rayford.
I was so confused by this.
So confused.
First thing he says to Ray is, "Get away from me, Steele, you scum."
That was very dramatic and made me laugh a lot.
A lot.
So I'm assuming what's happening here is he was just playing it up
when they
Carpathia?
Talk to each other later
because at first I thought he was genuinely mad at him, but then it becomes clear later on, like, no, he kind of knows what's happening, like, kind of, like,
yeah. I mean, he didn't know that Rayford was as in the dark as Rayford is.
Yeah, true.
So there's a little bit of it, but as soon as later they talk about it, it calms down. So even though his first words are "get away from me, you're scum," he's able to be calmed down from that opinion pretty quickly.
Yeah. So, you know, Earl and Rayford, they're professionals. So Earl goes to show Rayford how to use the new big plane. And Rayford sees from just looking at it, like, oh, this has been in development for years.
Yeah.
This is like a very fancy plane.
Yeah.
Once they get to the plane, very interesting, Earl immediately puts his finger to his mouth, like, be quiet, and, like, looks around for bugs.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm like, oh, okay. Like, so he's kind of acting like he's just trying to be safe.
Yeah.
And the reason that Earl is acting pissed is because he realizes that Carpathia wanted to make it look like the choice for Earl to fly to New York, which would have killed him, was Rayford's decision. This whole thing does not make a lot of sense to me.
No. I mean, I think we've talked about before that sometimes Carpathia's plans are, like, weird and complicated, and he just kind of, like, sprinkles them out there to see what happens, right? So we don't know what this means. We can speculate, like, but it feels very strange that Carpathia not just wants Earl dead, but wants Rayford to take the blame for it.
Yeah, take the blame and, like, feel like he did it himself, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, it does feel very interesting that and this comes up again in a second with Chico Hernandez, where it's like, Carpathia doesn't want people to have, like, connections and know things.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that is, like, a tactic. Like, that's a way of, like, you know, keeping people separated. Don't let them, like, share knowledge with each other so they can, like, figure things out. So that part is, like, realistic and makes sense to me. But the specifics of it, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't remember when it happens, but when Carpathia tells the Learjet man that he's leaving, it's so ominous of, like, you'll never see
I was like, okay, like, I just met this guy.
I'm like, he's going to I half expected them to be, like, in the Condor and hear an explosion.
Yeah, his plane just explodes.
Yeah.
So, like, we – because, like, it would make sense. Like, you just kill people that, like, have knowledge you don't want out there.
Yeah,
you just find another one.
Like, this guy knows where Carpathia is now, so he has to die. I could see them want to kill Earl because he knows about the Condor, whatever. And it's also mentioned, it's somewhat strange, that Earl is still a part of PanCon.
Yeah.
And
he's like, I'm not working for Carpathia.
Yeah. And, like, some other organization that's, like, North American Pilot Club or something. It's not that, but it's like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, stop throwing in these organizations that I don't know what they are. I know you guys are obsessed with airplanes, but stop.
And it doesn't matter. Like, it's never going to come up.
Shut the fuck up.
I mean, maybe it will come up again, but that's probably not. Let's be real. I don't think it will. So, before they, part ways, Earl says, just watch your back, Rayford. I've heard enough to know this is not all what it seems to be. and this man does not have the world's best interests at heart. I'm going to bring you up to speed on this plane, but then I think I'm a dead man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, very much like, hey, make sure to tell my wife I love her and yada, yada, yada when I get murdered.
It was making me mad that Rafer kept interrupting him and being like, I'll keep in touch with your wife. It's like, no, like, let him get the message. Like, shit is dangerous, obviously. Yeah. There's like freaking mushroom clouds everywhere on this earth.
He kept like interrupting me, like, that's not going to happen to you. I'm like, bro.
Why would you think that?
This is the third time you're like underestimating or whatever the fucking Antichrist and things of that nature.
Also, can I just say, I'm kind of surprised Rafer didn't try to get one last ditch witnessing in
there. Yeah, I agree.
Especially because he's not his boss anymore.
Yeah, he had a little bit of side eye about it, both with Earl and with Chico Hernandez a little bit. But I think this Ray is a slightly smarter Ray, right? Like, he's not going to bring it up as much because he knows how much of a shitstorm it can do. And both realistically and magically, right? Because people are resistant to it.
Yeah. We find out, too, that Carpathia is wanting to fly to Babylon. He wants to go east by going west.
Ooh, is that something?
Maybe it's a thing in the Bible. I don't fucking know. But yeah, the plan is they're going to Babylon, but they're going to go to San Francisco first. Because they do make sure to mention a couple times that the West Coast is pretty fine.
Yeah.
Mostly everything that's happening is east of the Mississippi.
Yeah. And I was like, huh? And my heart is hoping that they simply mean that classic thing of no one in California is a Christian.
I literally I was thinking that too. I was like, is that what they're implying?
I hope so. I hope it's that simple.
That's the Demon Coast. Yeah. Right? So those are Carpathia's boys over there in godless California.
Yeah, like of course New York got blown up where all the Christians live.
Yeah,
Washington, D.C., and then the South. I'm like,
but they don't even talk about the South. They only talk about Texas.
Well, they say the South too, but that's it. Right, they just throw a quick
in. Right, right. So it's like not even where they're mentioned.
Mobile, Alabama. Got hit.
I mean, it is kind of like when shit happens and people are like, they're gonna try to bomb Dubuque, Iowa, or like whatever. Like,
sir, a second plane has hit the giant peach in Gaffney.
Yeah, Gaffney, South Carolina. RIP to the giant peach. It looks like a butt.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, it's probably not gonna happen. Just letting you know.
You're saying it's probably not going to happen.
I don't think the terrorists are going to blow up the giant peach in Gaffney, South Carolina.
The way that, I wouldn't be surprised if they threw in, they blew up outlet malls. I don't know. Anything airplane related makes sense for these books, right?
What would be the most, Christian things to blow up?
Like the bad guys blowing it up?
Yeah.
I mean, churches.
Obviously, but I mean things that just have a Christian vibe to them.
Walmart?
I was thinking like shopping centers.
Yeah.
Malls.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not libraries.
No, those are fine. Yeah. They'll be okay. Anyway, let's go slide into our last section of chapter 2, because we're back to Buck and Donnie, and they're talking fancy computers.
Hell yeah,
Cause,
baby.
Because Donnie is, like we said, not just about phones and printers, but also computers.
All tech, baby.
Buck says that he needs 5 of the absolute best top-of-the-line computers, as small and compact as they can be, but with as much power and memory and speed and communications abilities as you can wire into them.
I wanted them so bad to list tech specs.
Oh, yeah, how many gigs are we talking here, baby?
This has so much storage, it has 10 gigs inside of it. It's unheard of. But this actually makes more sense why he when we mentioned before, this part is not going to be on the devil card. But he literally does say they have to be able to be hidden.
Yeah.
But these are his pre super rapture computers.
Right. Cause the whole thing is he wants them to be very powerful, but also for the transmission to be untraceable.
Yeah.
And Donnie's like, buddy, I got you.
Yeah.
I can make you the dopest computers. And they can even do video conferencing. Only problem, they're probably going to cost $20,000 a piece. Which is can we just take a moment and remember how expensive computers used to be?
Yeah. I don't know if mine said the cost, but maybe I was just so excited at the end of the chapter I wasn't paying as much.
Yeah. Mine specifically said $20,000 each for the computer.
Wow.
But I mean, I remember my first laptop that I got when I went to college, I was at least $1,000 for not a nice laptop.
Yeah.
Computers should be expensive as hell.
Well, that's about the way they cost now, kind of.
For a nice one.
I mean, now you can get what you got theoretically for $500.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like the equivalent of it. It's just like the past, it's the same as TVs now.
Yeah.
Like TVs are just so much fancier and mm-hmm. you get them for cheaper.
Everything's changing.
I can't believe it.
Wow.
But yeah, they kind of, the end of chapter two, a little anticlimactic because it's just like, we're getting dope computers. Yeah. Yay. That's the end.
Yeah. And it's confusing. I mean, it really does feel like, it's not really a negative thing, right? I like when books do this. It literally just picks up where we left off, right? Yeah. So it doesn't quite feel like the stereotypical, like, we got to hook you in the beginning. They just kind of smatter about, like, more bombs blowing up.
Yeah.
Like we said, the ones near Buck and Chloe just kind of happen. Carpathia grills some people about it. And then it's like, more bloodshed and destruction, like, all over the place.
Yep.
So we don't know if they're – like, I don't know why I care so much. I think I just, like – I like war stuff, whatever. But, like, I'm just so – I'm so curious. Especially, like, their version of it, like, what they think is
– No, real. no, totally, totally.
So I'm very curious to see, like, how they describe it, you know. And I think it would be just as interesting if they don't go deeper.
I think it would have been cool if they started the book, like, in the midst of something, like, super insane. Mm-hmm. It's like the two witnesses are floating in the air and they're shooting out lasers. And then it's, like, 6 months previous.
Like, oh, God.
Like, how do we get
here? Riff said, man, how the hell did I get the damn here?
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, guys, we're back.
We're back.
Not the most exciting early chapters, but you know it's going to get good.
Yeah, you know it's going to just pick the hell up.
You know Carpathia is going to be wilding out soon.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, this book is called Nikolai.
Yeah, baby. This is about him. You know who I miss?
Who?
Hattie.
Well, she gets mentioned at least. But
she gets mentioned for a second, but we don't get to see her.
She's like, back to Babylon with Hattie.
We don't get to see her, like, being snotty at people who deserve it, and I do, and I miss her very much.
Well, maybe Carpathia is kind of a bitch at Amanda because Hattie hates her or something like that.
Oh, that's probably
Hattie's
true.
Also mean to her.
Yeah, that's true. No, that does make sense. Mm-hmm. And he's on his girl's side.
Yeah.
He supports his queen's rights and wrongs.
He's a number one feminist, right?
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing. For
right, which
people.
Is a bad thing. Of course, obviously.
I'm glad to be back. You know, first episode of a new book is always exciting, even though, as we just got done saying, the chapters aren't always. But it does make my heart into a sponge.
Yes, you're ready.
Suck up all of this beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Delicious.
You can head over to patreon.com/contenthole. To get other bonus content from Jennifer and I.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is Tribulation Farce themed. Some of it is Greater Us Universe.
Talking about stuff. Other shows that we've enjoyed.
Yeah, we tried to do a fun Leftovers rewatch, but I think we got sick. Like, right after it, that was like May or something.
It was a while ago. I don't know. Like, it's funny because it, like, really didn't hook me as much as I thought it was going to, which is, like, not fair because I know most shows you gotta give them a few episodes.
Yeah. And I'm a little nervous the format maybe wasn't conducive, but we'll think on it again if we want to do Couchcast episode two.
Can I also just be open with everyone? I have a new hyper-focus right now. The problem is that I'm spending most of my free time watching wrestling.
Yeah, everybody. So,
which makes me happy. And I think that while The Leftovers is good, I don't think it would make me happy to watch it. So in these tough times, it's, I haven't been able to talk myself into it quite as much.
Yeah.
But,
And, you know,
you can get back into it.
You've been trying to finish some crocheted Christmas gifts. So
yes, exactly. No, I'm a busy bee with my crocheting. So
already a lot of bonus episodes there you can check out. So that is patreon.com/contenthole. Without that, we would not do the things for which we do.
Mm-hmm.
Tell a friend about the show. As we said before, the show has bad SEO because anyone that searches for Left Behind probably doesn't want to listen to our take on it.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of ex-Christian folks that would be into it if they heard about it, or maybe people that are just so baffled that these things exist. Let a friend know.
Yeah.
Spread the good word.
Yeah.
Print out our Bible and give it to them.
Yeah,
so
print
to speak.
Out all 5,000 pages of our podcast transcript and bind it simply. Simple binding.
Simple binding.
And hand it out.
Yeah. You can also find the pod online. We don't post, but hey, I don't know. Fuck. At TribForcePod on FarcePod on both Twitter and Instagram. If you have emails, send them over to TribulationFarce at gmail.com. Always love hearing your takes as it regards to, you know, hey, maybe like you walked down the stairs and your parents were disappeared and you're scared about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like I said, people who were able to do the math on what the 100 megaton bomb would be and things like that. Very, very thankful for anyone who emails us. Definitely thankful to anyone who listens, of course. It means so much. Leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen. I know both Spotify and iTunes have it. So, you know, that's how you got to do it in this modern podcast world. We got to hustle, and you got to help us hustle. Hustle, hustle, hustle.
So true.
So true. Like a thief in the night, we are gone.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.